Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And today, as you probably know, this tune will be in your ear, whether you can hear it or not, because this is the probably one of the best known instrumentals in the country, the theme from the Sunday game. And we gotta say, yes, there it is. And a better way to introduce my three guests, the presenter of the Saturday game on radio, because he, Damien, as he told me, he thinks he has a face for radio, but he's a GAA reporter travelling all over the country. He's sitting beside me here in Dublin. Marty Morrissey, just checking, Marty, you're online somewhere, Marty.
Good
calling
afternoon.
In, Marty.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Okay, that's
Marty
enough. That's enough.
Joe.
Yeah, leave it at that, Marty. We'll see you next week. Grania. Grania McAleer. Grania, where are you? Conas to talk to?
Tommy Gamay, Joe. Tommy. In Radio Nagaltic that and shot you Gasla.
Grania McIlwain is you went, and there's a great program. I think it's starting tonight, isn't it, Grania? And TG Cahir. I loved reading about it last night.
Scéalta na Gcoran, yeah, it's a series about the GAA silverware. It's on tonight on 8 o'clock on TG Cahir.
Okay. And Damien, you're somewhat time tied, so off you go. We're talking about the unsung heroes. Now this will be controversial because some people say, well, I knew that chap. But the unsung heroes, and indeed, more importantly at times, the heroines.
Yeah,
you do your list.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. And look, there's a few strands to it as well, because what's your definition of unsung? What's your definition of underrated? Is it true medals? Is it true performance, longevity? There's a whole lot. But I think we've 1,600 clubs on the island of Ireland, 32 counties, all led by volunteers. And to me, they are the true local heroes of the GAA. They contribute maybe 1.5 billion euro. That's the cost of volunteerism in the GAA every single year to Irish society. And the social value of that is enormous, Joe. And you can go anywhere, as Grania and Marty will fill in a moment or two, you can go anywhere around this island and see people propping up their local GAA clubs by true sheer commitment and effort. Some people go to an inter-county stage, some people reach great heights, get great profile, and others don't. Just top of my head here, a whistle stop. This weekend is very important for one man and individual. And it's Aidan O'Shea from Mayo, who's a huge profile and probably doesn't fit the bill here at all. But Aidan is on the go since 2009. This is his 17th season. He is about to make his 200th league and championship appearance for Mayo this weekend against Leitrim in the Connacht semi-final. He's lost 6 All-Ireland senior finals in the process. He's probably one of the most scrutinised players in Gaelic games at the moment. Yet he keeps coming back for more. People have opinions where to play him. Yeah. They have opinions on how good or how important he is.
People, All-Ireland finals. Many has he...
Unfortunately, he's lost 6 in senior level.
And he's been there.
He's come very... Look, he probably puts them all together mentally, but he keeps coming back for more. Probably had a tough maybe defeat at minor level as well, Joe.
Yeah.
But
that was incredible.
An extraordinary career, 16
incredible.
Years on the go now. And then you move down to provinces.
But you mentioned, just why do you mention 200 league and championship appearances for Mayo, which is incredible. There's one man coming up who contacted us. He's been to, he's a supporter. He's been to 102 All-Ireland finals. 102.
Both codes, obviously, or maybe
three
or four codes.
Yeah, but he tells me he's only about 47 and a half. But he said he's been to 102. Can that be beaten? Mary Jo Curran.
Yeah, so Mary Jo Curran is a legend across this island, but so humble, so low-key. And to put it in the frame, what this woman has done for the Ladies Football Association, for Kerry Ladies, 10 All-Ireland medals between the 80s and 90s, 10 All-Stars to go with it, a career that spanned from 1976 right up to 1993. She was part of a team that did 9 medals and 9 All-Ireland titles in a row, Joe. And if you met Mary Jo in the morning, so modest, so unassuming, so low-key, but a bona fide legend in these parts.
And it's great that you mention women so early, because they are now such a part of the sport. John Jackson Kylie.
Yeah. So John Jackson Kylie would be known to Marty, and he'd be known to Grania, and he'd be known to people in the Gaelic football realm as being one of the greatest characters that the GAA has ever seen. He might come in maybe with his team picked on the back of a Benson and Hedges or a 10 major box.
Okay.
But an absolute genius behind the whole thing. In Waterford, where football is not, you know, the first choice of sport in every part of the county, it's fair to say, stereotypically, they've been at the bottom of the ladder in terms of, you know, success at football. But John led the county to two All-Ireland junior titles in 1999 and in 2004. And I remember him saying that the biggest fear he had over the second title was they had a little open-top bus parade down one of the towns, and one of the lads kept trying to jump off the bus. So happy and so excited was he. So that was probably Jackson's biggest managerial success, keeping this man on the bus and keeping him safe. He took over the senior team. They had credibility. They had passion. He got people to play that shouldn't really have played because they didn't have time to play football for Waterford. Yeah. He kept the show on the road for so long, and he brought respect back into Waterford football. One of the great, great characters.
And John Jackson is John Jackson. Kylie is Jackson. Is
he yeah, that is his after name? The famous general, and I suppose,
oh, they've got after the famous general. Okay, because stay there, Damon. Yeah. Now you are saying that's Damon Lotta. Grania McIlwain, Grania.
Hi, Joe. This was really, really difficult to do because there are so many people. We know so many people who are the unsung heroes who go out and line pitches. They wash the kit. Yeah. They're there opening the grounds. They're there closing the grounds. They're selling the lotto tickets, which, let's face it, are really, really difficult and challenging to bring money into the club. So there's loads and loads of different people that we can talk about. But the people I chose, is the reason we all go to games is to watch players. And I think for players, and particularly from counties that not necessarily are going to be an automatically that you're going to actually win in All Ireland. I start with my own county. So I said, we'll be a bit parochial, I says here today,
course.
Joe.
You're
so
welcome.
I'm from Monaghan, and I'm from a club called Scotstown. And my first experience going to a GAA game in the All Ireland semi final as a child was to Croke Park when Monaghan were playing Kerry in 1985. And that was a brilliant game. At that time, Monaghan were really successful. And we can't, my younger brother at the time was saying, oh, we don't have to go up to Dublin again, do we? Little did we know that how few times we will be going up the road to Croke Park when we were kids. But at that stage, when they were playing that game from Scotland, like, we had five players on that team. We had Gene Sherry, Jerry McCarville, Fergus Caulfield, Bernie Murray, Ray McCarn, and also the great Nudie Hughes from Castleblaney Fogs.
Yeah.
And he was a three-time All-Star. So they were a brilliant, brilliant team. And when you look back, you go, gosh, you know, for a small county to get to Croke Park, to level with Kerry, who were in the middle, coming towards the end of that brilliant, brilliant team, but they still managed to win three All-Irelands at that stage. And it took a replay to separate them. So when I think of unsung heroes and people I would have loved to have seen win in All-Ireland, they were players that I definitely would have loved to have seen one. And as well as that, Conor McManus. Conor, who has recently retired from Monaghan, has been a terrific servant, a terrific footballer for his club and for his county. He's won three All-Stars as well. So they have been people that we have looked up to and have inspired so many young people playing. And in our ladies' football teams as well, when we look at those, they won All-Irelands in 1996 and 1997. And Brenda McInnesby was one of the stalwarts of that team. And her daughters, Kira and Aoife, were involved in All-Ireland, and unfortunately for them, never managed to get over the line in 2011-2013. Their brother Ryan will be playing now against Donegal in the Ulster quarter-final on Sunday in Clonus.
Great.
Sharon Courtney, Amanda Casey, these were all fabulous players that maybe didn't get the recognition that they all deserved. So I'd like to mention there's so many of them that deserve that. So they've always put their county, their club on the map. And for us, even though they didn't win in All-Ireland, they were definitely heroes. And their character and what they've actually inspired so many people to get involved and play in the sport too, Joe, has been immense as well.
And I was reading about your programme, which starts tonight, Scaleton na Gorn, about the trophies. And one of the places you travel to was Rathoath. And you find out about, you talk about Garda Sean Eve, who was killed in the line of duty. But another talented member of a local GAA, which sparked me to go looking, John Morley, Garda, former Mayo captain, killed, murdered in the line of duty. Henry Bourne was with him, I should mention that. Even Colm Horgan in the last few years, Colm, as we know, was killed in 2020 in the line of duty as a guard. He was prominent in the Sarsfield GAA. So the connection in so many strands of Irish life in the GAA is incredible. Apparently 1,680 Gardaí have played a senior inter-county GAA level. That's a book I was looking at last night by Colin Montgomery. Where's Mark? Thanks. Stay there, Grania. Marty.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Good afternoon. Off you go, Marty. The show is yours until about 3 minutes to three. Okay. And then I'd put a word in. I'd put a word in for you with Ray.
Ah, fair play. I always wanted to present Liveline. Talk to Marty. Forget about Joe.
It's only a matter of time. Go ahead, Marty.
I agree, actually. It's funny that Grania talks about Monaghan because Brendan McInnesby was on my list because in the 1997 All-Ireland final, she played in that match and she was pregnant. And she went on to win three All-Stars, a wonderful family. But I suppose I look at the broader picture here. What makes the GAA so strong? And I suppose it's true for every sporting organisation, but since we're talking about the GAA in particular, is the volunteer. The volunteer who goes out every Friday night or Saturday morning and lines the pitch and puts up the flags and puts up the nets. The GAA as we know it would not be possible without that love and passion. And maybe it began with Michael Cusick, who came from my own county of Clare and cycled in 1884 from the hearts of the Burn in the Carron and cycled all the way to Hayes' Hotel to start off the GAA. Maybe that was his modus operandi and philosophy, and that was what he hoped. But I think we all have a love of club in particular. I remember coming from Cork when I was based in Cork and in Dublin and going to training in West Clare with the club. The club meant everything to me. Mind you, some of my friends tell me that the best thing I ever did was retire from playing club football with Kilmore because they started winning matches when I did.
Back.
No, things have dramatically improved since.
And the story of Laz Malloy.
Yeah, that was I always love talk about a hero. Laz was playing with his club in a tournament game in Dublin on the same day that Offaly were playing Longford in a Leinster Championship replay.
Right.
And Martin Furlong got injured after the drawing game, and the goalkeeper that they put in, Desi Wynn, I think was his name, he wasn't having the best game of his life. So PJ Cunningham, a great journalist, Sunday Tribune,
great,
and a good friend of mine, he met Laz Malloy on his way in to the match to sit in the Hogan stand.
Okay.
So the word went out to Eugene McGee to say, look, you might need to change your goalkeeper. So over the public address system, Leinster Championship match, came the notice, Fogra, would Laz Malloy please go to the Offaly dressing room immediately? You couldn't imagine that happening in 2025.
Incredible.
So hero Laz went down from the Hogan. He went out. He was told he was needed for the second half. He went out to the car, got his boots, went in and played for Offaly. And he made some good saves. And actually, they went on to win the match. Now, did Laz ever play for Offaly again? No. But at least he got a game.
But his name was called out to Tano again, apparently in Croker. Could Laz Malloy move his car?
Correct.
It's blocking the A. Oh, that's brilliant. It can only happen in the GAA. Only happened in Ireland in our biggest stadium as well. In what was that, 1984? Paddy Joe Bourke. Paddy.
Yeah, Joe, good man.
And who do you want to remember? Off you go.
I'm from Roscommon, Joe, and thanks very much for having me on your programme. And lovely listening there. God, the GAA is steeped in history, isn't it? Everyone has a story. But we were very fortunate coming from Roscommon, we got to the All Ireland final in 1980.
Yeah.
Great to see your team in an All Ireland final, and we're a bit like Monaghan. We're a small county, and we have done very well. And we had some of the best footballers in Ireland came from Roscommon. We were awful lucky, Joe. We were blessed with the great Gerry O'Malley. We had Dermot Earley, Tony McManus, Harry Keegan, Tony, and. And John O'Gara and Jerry Connellan. But in 1989, we were playing Mayo in the Connacht final, Joe, and we were down by 2 points. And Mickey Kearns was the referee from Sligo, and he awarded us a penalty.
Okay.
Now, Mayo were leading by 2 points.
Right.
Tony McManus got the ball, and he was taking the penalty.
And this is Tony,
now,
is your own son here.
Poor Saka, he missed the penalty for Arsenal, but he went on to get a great goal after. But Tony, before Tony took the penalty, Joe, there was only 90 seconds left in the game. And we were down by 2 points. He went to Mickey Cairns, the ref, to inquire how long was there to go. Because he knew he was going to score, and that had put us a pint up.
Yes.
And he was wondering, had Mayo enough time to go up to get the 11 and pint? So Tony put the ball down, and there was 35,000 in Hyde Park. The whole of Mayo turned for fear he'd score, and the whole of Roscommon we nearly turned for fear he wouldn't. The pressure that was on him, what a monumental kick. Tony scored, and now we were a pint up. But Mayo got the kick out and they came up the field and they won a close in three. They drew the game. The game went into extra time and Jimmy Burke, he scored a goal with his knee, his elbow, the top of his nose, and he put Mayo into the All-Ireland semi-final. They actually got to the All-Ireland in 1989, Mayo. They played Cork that year. But Tony McManus' goal... In the Connacht final, the pressure he was under.
Could have, should have,
was one of the great scorers of all time that I'd seen.
And Tony was a vet, isn't that what you told me?
That's right, Tony was a vet, yeah.
Okay, great. And who came up with calling the Roscommon the Rossies? It's not you. I know you wear your jersey to Mass every Sunday, your Roscommon jersey. Who coined the Roscommon the Rossies? Because it's not Paul or Rossi.
Joe, I was awful lucky. Do you know how you get 15 minutes of fame while you're alive? Just, I was awful lucky I got it. Me and Mammy, we were watching the 1982 World Cup.
Okay.
And Paul Arathi, he got the golden boot when Italy won. And he scored a goal. And I said to Mammy, if that fellow was playing for the Roscommon, for our lads, we'd be able to say, come on, the Rossies.
Come on, the Rossies. And that was it.
So single-handed, I spread it around
well
the world.
Well done, Paddy Joe. Well done.
And I'm awful proud of that, Joe.
You should be. You should be, Paddy Joe. Yes,
Paddy Joe will remember the 1992 Connacht final. Do you remember that, Paddy Joe?
Between
Mayo and Roscommon. And there was a kind of a habit at the time that, you know, fellas would swing off the crossbar. But Enon Gavan was playing for Roscommon. He was cornerback, I think, Paddy Joe, far as I remember.
That's right, he was. And got an all-star.
Yeah, and Mayo were on the attack anyway and were trying to stop the ball either going into net or over the bar. But Enon arrived with the speed, he couldn't stop himself. So he leaped onto the crossbar and the crossbar duly broke in two.
Smacked.
And the Connacht final was delayed for about 15 or 20 minutes while somebody got a hammer and nail and put it back together again.
Where would it happen? Paddy Joe...
The very same thing had happened in 1962. Galway were leading by 5 points and the crossbar got broke. And some of the Galway fans had left Castlebar going home. And they fixed the crossbar and Gerry O'Malley got 1-1 and we went on to beat Galway. It was an unbelievable turnaround to the crossbar breaking.
Great memory. And great memories, Paddy Joe. That's Paddy Joe Bourke. He's above in Sligo at the moment. Where's Paul Cairns? Paul, who do you want to remember? Mickey Cairns. Mickey.
Yes, Joe. Paul Connaughton is my name.
Sorry, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I want to mention two players from Sligo that... I think they would have walked on to any team in the country in their heyday. And that's Mickey Cairns in the late 70s. And he won the Connacht title in 75. And Eamon O'Hara, who's actually an RTÉ Sunday game pundit, he won his only Connacht title in 2010. And I think he would be good enough for any county in the country. So Mickey Cairns was the leading scorer in the country for many years, every year for many years. But he just won one Connacht title in 1975.
And he was a leading scorer. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
And never got the silverware.
Never got the silverware apart from one Connacht title.
Okay, that's the time.
Eamon O'Hara likewise in 2010.
Well, it's great to name them. Really is, Paul. Thanks indeed, as Paul. Paul is a Sligo fan. I presume you're up around that part of the country. Finbar Bevan is in Cork. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text. Finbar, this is really important. Mrs. Anne Cook, Finbar.
Yeah, otherwise known as Mrs. Napiercy.
Yeah.
She would be, you know, the hero of my hero. The woman never catch a holly in her life. But she, you ever heard the saying, she made a million sandwiches. Yeah. She was one of those people that was there for everything. No matter when it was wanted, when it was done,
she
it'll be there, leave it there, and she'll do it. She was that kind of person. She was always, she lived with the family the whole lot.
Yeah.
She loved the Piercing. She lived about 5 minutes, about 5 minutes from the pitch, the Piercing on the north side of Fenry. I'm talking about her now, and she died last week. But a fantastic woman. I believe I didn't go to her, but I believe I had to go somewhere else. Everybody was probably 1,000 people there. She was so well known, so loved by everyone.
And when you say
I could speak of a lot more.
Of course you could, Finbar, and we'll get to it. But you say she was known as, was she known to people as Mrs. Napiercyck?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she was. Mrs. That was her commitment.
The club called after. Was she called after the club? What was the club called after her? She was so devoted to Napiercyck, you know? a beautiful person, lovely woman to
God
speak
rest
to.
Her. God rest her.
You know, I bless her. I could meet on some, I mean, there's other people who, they're going to play with the players because young for. We never thought about who was the judges with the ball and put up in this and all that. We just played the game when we went away.
Yeah, well
other people
said.
Had to be there, volunteers.
So you didn't,
will never die in Ireland as long as you have volunteers like those.
Okay, well said, Finbar. That's Finbar, Bevan and Cork. Madge, you want to come in and you want to mention other women as well, and that was Finbar remembering the late Mrs. Anne Cook, known as Mrs. Napiercig, who only died last week, and condolences to Anne, Mrs. Napiercig's family and comrades in the game. Madge.
Yes.
Madge O'Callaghan is in Clare. Madge.
Yeah, well, my two sisters, Joe, are the people I wanted to mention.
Okay.
Angela Story and Ida Hernan were two women that sold programmes at Croke Park for every big match. And they were brilliant because they were out in all sorts of weather.
Yeah.
But when people came from all over the country, they had a smile, they had a chat for everybody, and they'd be telling people where to go to get the nicest pint after the match.
Of course,
You know, where would you go for a good meal or that sort of stuff.
Madge, what years are we talking about? What era?
Now, they were there for a long time, Joe. I suppose they were there up until about 10 years ago. They would have been there for about 30 years before that.
And at what age would they have started?
They were quite young. They both played camogie in their youth.
Of course,
and all of their children played at club level. One of them, in fact, played at county level as well. And but they would have been—I suppose they would have been in their 30s when they started selling the programme, or maybe their 40s.
And isn't it? I know in my day, does it still exist when you sell the programme? Some of the money goes back to your local club.
That's right. They would get a kind of a stipend for selling the programme, and then most of the money would go back to the local club. So they would raise the money to go back into the club. But they were also great Dub supporters. They would have been at every match that was going. And my brother has told me since that he was also selling programmes. When they couldn't sell outside the grounds, you know, when they were years ago, you could only sell the programmes inside the grounds.
Okay.
And he was one of those sellers. And then he went on to become an umpire, as he said, a blind umpire. The umpires were always blind.
I know, that's what they were called. Yeah. Very cruel.
So there was a huge connection there for our family.
And it's the O'Callaghan family from the famous Cabra family from Banner Road in Cabra, Cabra West.
That's us. And my dad was, he was on the stiles there. And of course, we used to, you know, there was the famous Sean Ogo Calico.
Of course.
And we used that wasn't our dad, but we used to say it was.
Okay.
And he'd be on the stiles, and so we'd often be there with him just because we had to be. He was a widower, and he had 10 children.
Well done.
He bring us along with him.
Best and well done to people like the O'Callaghan family and to Angela and Ian, and indeed yourself, Madge. Madge O'Callaghan is now in Clare. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking about the unsung heroes of the GAA and heroines of the GAA. Damien Lawler, our GAA reporter and presenter of the Saturday game. Damien, you've a few more on your list there.
I do, Joe. I suppose, first of all, a bit like Marty and Grania, I'm very lucky to be from Killer One in County Tipperary. And, you know, we've so many heroes in that club and living in Naas at the moment. And people like John Holmes, who've single-handedly got hurling going, in underage level in Naas. And I think a couple of years ago, Naas won the All-Ireland Intermediate title, 35 lads on the squad, and everybody came through John's nursery.
Yeah,
and, you know, people like have been there before and to do the job, but what a volunteer effort, you know. And again, I've had it in my own parish, thank God, back in Killer One. But all around me, I look at somebody like maybe Pat Critchley from Laois, basketballer, hurler, footballer, Laois's only all-star, and it tells half the story.
And handball.
Basketball.
Oh, basketball.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm sure he probably played handball as well. He did everything else. Yeah, but it tells half story. Brilliant. He played in Faila 90 on stage with his rock band, the Mere Mortals.
Okay.
And I think, again, Danny tells a bit of the story because Pat is known as a mentor,
a coach, former PE teacher, and so many people he's helped along the way. A person that stands out big time for me is Sarah Rowe from Mayo. She is probably top of her tree in three separate codes over the last few years. She was among the best ladies footballers in Ireland over the last decade. A talented soccer player, Vera Powell, before she moved on from Ireland, called her into a training squad. And then and moved back to the Australian rules. So three codes, an unsung hero as well. And I think before I stop talking, back in 1996, there was always one image that stays with me. Wexford made the breakthrough, finally won an All-Ireland, and the great George O'Connor dropping to his knees with his hands praying to the skies. And the hands were absolutely bet off him, Joe. And what George went through for 17 years, you know, with his teammates to get Wexford over the line.
And briefly, because I know you've got to go, but I'm very conscious that the two books, one is how the GAA, that you've written, Damon, the GAA got through the COVID storm. But even recently in the storm, what, 6 weeks ago now, it was the GAA clubs that people fled to and tried to get batteries charged and cooking and washing facilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such a part.
And you see, I think I mentioned there's 1,600 GAA clubs throughout the Ireland. They're in every corner of Ireland. There's a presence there. All the community members know the local roads. They know who needs attention, who needs help, who needs care. It happened during COVID. Messages delivered, people brought out, going around to visit people, social distancing, all that. It happened again with the recent storm, and I think it's more than a GAA club. It's a extension of your community.
And I was thinking at the time that the government should give a generator to every GAA club in the country, and someone or one or two people should be charged, pardon the pun, with how to operate it, because that would have been fantastic when the electricity went nationwide. Grania, keep going, Grania. Do you want to come in there? You do.
Just to pick up on what Damien says there about volunteers and people involved, and it's a lifetime involvement, what I find. And I live in Connemara now, and my club here now is Niavanna Litchimore, and one of the stalwarts of the club is Pat Cullamine, Pat O'Connor, who does so much work for the club. He's over 60 years been involved in the club, and you will see him everywhere. Like, there's so many people like him around the country, selling tickets, sitting outside shops looking for selling tickets or whatever way he can help. And these are the people that make clubs so successful that they are. But in terms of our going back to our players, like, one of the players that I've come across is Caroline O'Hanlon from Armagh. Like, Caroline O'Hanlon, this is her 24th season playing for Armagh. She's a Dr. Joe. She's also Northern Ireland's netball's most capped player of all time. And has made more than 150 British Super League appearances for four different franchises, and has included two title wins with Manchester Thunder. So absolutely inspirational. And another story as well, when I left my full-time pensionable job and moved down as from a teacher from Dublin down to live down in Dungarvan down and working on Ryan in Waterford for an Emmeton TV productions. And that time when I left, so it was 2003, I made that career move. And this is where Waterford were in their total hype, and those years between 2002 and 2008, they were just really successful. This huge rivalry with Cork, and we were lucky enough to be involved in that. And what I love about GAA players in particular, they're so relatable, and you're going to meet them. You know, you can go anywhere and you'll meet them in the shop. And Dan Shanahan, who was Dan the man who scored six goals in the 2004 campaign, he was actually the local oil man, so he would come round giving the oil. And what was really interesting, before the big games, you know, you might have ordered oil, the oil I think sales went up sky high during the summer months because people wanted to hear him and talk to him.
Great,
that atmosphere of actually of meeting all these players, and the likes of Dan Shanahan, John Milan, Ken McGrath, Tony Brown, like, how phenomenal. Paul Flynn, those players, well, where they won their Munster titles, but unfortunately for them, they just did not get over the line for the All-Ireland finals as they met that great Kilkenny team.
And give us a shout out, Grania, for your Camogie players.
For my Camogie players, we have Niamh Mulcahy from Limerick. How her uncle was the great Mick Mackey from Limerick, and her mum and her dad played as well. So she spent 15 seasons playing for Limerick. And as well, as I always think, these players are the unsung heroes as well, because they're not guaranteed success at this very high level, but they keep turning up, they keep giving their best. And she won her first All-Star in 2019, and very, very humble individual, ended up just retiring in 2020 without really saying it to anyone, just left the scene. Aisling Connolly as well, you know, from the great Connolly family. She's won All-Stars as well, you know, have done so much work for the game too. And people that you would love to see winning All-Ireland and again do so much work for them is Beth Carton with Waterford at the moment. Like, she is still playing. She's a massive player for them. They got to the All-Ireland final for the first time in 78 years in 2023, and unfortunately they had a tough day in that final, but a driving force for them. And as I said, when you have players of this calibre on your team, they're just inspiring so many young girls and young boys to get involved in playing the sport. And you, every club, every county needs these stars and needs these people that are just so brilliant, so that we can all become them or try and emulate them in some way.
Well said. That's Grania McIlwain. Grania staying with us. Damien has to leave, isn't that? What was the other book you wrote, Damien?
It doesn't matter at this stage, but one name I'd like to mention, Joe.
I just want to know, are Meta Robin it? Is it on AI?
I might get a few credits from it. One name I'd like to mention before he goes is, going back to where Grania was in Waterford, Michael Ryan. Michael Ryan guided 32 ladies football teams to All-Ireland titles, and he became the Waterford senior hurling manager a few years later, but an absolute legend of the GAA.
Okay, let's rattle through a few of our great callers. Ned Cagney, sorry for holding your neg. You, Ned, you say love of GAA came from you're from a farming family.
And yes, that's true, Joe. Thanks for the opportunity.
That's Damien saying goodbye for those watching us on telly.
Joe, no, I remember walking down the passage and a man had come on in a Volkswagen Beetle car.
Yeah.
And he'd collect me at the end of the road, and there'd be six or seven lads inside in the car and take us off. That was about 1973, and there was no such thing as belts or anything, but we get a belt in the field.
Great.
You know, but the passion, it brings me back to, that was a man by the name of Danny Horrigan, a great man, didn't want any tanks, and they're the people I remember today, the people that don't want any tanks, you know. And as well as that, just a great memory I had with Rory McIlroy going down on his knees and starting the balls
by
America. But it reminded me of, in 2018, there was 50,000 Limerick people above in Croke Park. And the amount of people that started bawling, crying, you know, it just shows the passion that's there. And they, a lot of them people may never have played GAA, but just they stayed
point.
With it. We never won an All-Ireland in, 45 years? But they just stayed with it and they kept going and going, you know.
Have tears ever brought to you? I'll come back in a Marty.
Yes.
I know, I hear you coming in there. people do cry at GAA, I think more so than any other supporters, I get the impression.
Yeah, I mean, it is a love of place and it is a pride of place, which is unique.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is
your village, it is your town, it is your city. You can be whether urban Ireland or rural Ireland. There is a sense of, this is where I am from.
Yeah.
And whether you've won an All-Ireland with Coola or Na Fianna from Dublin, or whether it's down in Salt Hill, Knocknacarra and Galway. I mean, the thing I often boast about is that my own club, Kilmurry Brechin, we're the only Clare club to get to an All-Ireland club final, which is now, believe it or not, 15 years ago when we lost to St. Gall's from Belfast, from the Falls Road, in the All-Ireland Club Final. But I think it was the only day, well, I've had many emotional days at Croke Park, but that was one day when I just felt, gosh, this is unbelievable. Like, when I was playing, we'd no field. We'd run around the cocks of hay during the summer. And we worked hard, all the volunteers in my own parish, whether it was Michael Telty, Moose as we call him, Michael Constantine is the present chairman, and we now have a field that we're very proud of and won Munster Club. But we had a dream. We all had a dream that we would win championships. But, you know, I also get a great kick out of, I'm boasting a small bit now, Joe, but I
never.
Won a Junior C, not a Junior A or Junior B, but a Junior C hurling championship with Clonbunny. And it was an amalgamation of great hurling clubs, from those of people from Clare that are listening, Milltown Malbay, Moy, Coora Clare, Dunbeg and Kilmurry, who probably would be dangerous with a hurling. But anyway, we won the Junior C, but it united four or five parishes together who would have been traditional great football rivalries. And the late Tom Malone rang me one day. He says, any chance you come down and play a tournament match tomorrow? We're playing Navan in Kilbaha, out in Loophead. And I said, Tom, I've no car. I was only a student at the time. No problem, we'll pick you up. So Tom arrived with this spud lorry, a big, huge lorry. And I hopped into the back of it and we sang Clare songs with the great Joe Cullen and all the way down. And we played hurling against Navan with hay flying in all sorts of directions.
And I
as
think,
far
yeah.
away from Croke Park as you could possibly
and
imagine.
I think that point you make is so strong, Marty. The connection, every parish. And lots of times the parish can be the underdog. And then when you do get up there, the tears do flow. John Arnold is in for my John, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you keeping?
I'm not too bad.
How many All-Irelands have you been to?
I started going in 72, Joe, to the hurling and the football in 73. So I think there's 108 All-Ireland gone since, but I wasn't at 108. I missed a few of them. I think I've been at 102. I think it's 102,
That is, have you ever met anyone who's been at more All-Ireland?
I have. I'm only on the pension for 12 months. I mean, I'd meet fellas. I remember a few years ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I met a man from Wexford who was 90, and he had been at All-Ireland, I think, since in hurling football, since he was about 14, because I asked him, it was about 10 or 12 years ago, I asked him at the time what was the biggest change that he had seen in life and in the GA. And he said the biggest change that he had seen, especially 10, 12 years ago, he said, when I was young, he said, if we wanted to smoke, we'd stay in the house, and if we wanted to have if we wanted to go to the toilet, we'd go outside. Now he said, if we want to smoke, we have to go outside, and if we wanted to go to the toilet, we can stay inside.
Brilliant.
So I know I wouldn't. I know.
What's your local club, John? Your local club?
My local club in the parish of Battle in Rucomack is a club called Bride Rovers. It's called after the local river which was founded in 1928. But again, I found out at an early age, I was kind of inspired to join the GAA by two local men, David John Barry and Dave Ryan. They're gone to their eternal reward with years, and they used to take us around as juveniles. But I found out at a very early stage, maybe 14 or 15, that I was worse than useless. I was dangerous, actually. I played a few matches, but unfortunately, I broke
like
a fella's
me,
nose. I broke a fella's nose in a football match. I broke a fella's kneecap. And I broke a fella's leg in three different matches.
Oh,
and
you thought
the thing is, yeah, but they were all playing with me. They were all in my own team, unfortunately.
Brilliant.
I kind of learned at about the age of 17, maybe as well have to stay on the sideline. And I got involved in administration. And I'd be inspired every Sunday or any Sunday. I go to Mass when I go into our own church. I walk, when I'm walking to the altar, there's a priest buried there, a Father Barry. He was buried 125 years ago, and it was he got the GA going in tough times in our parish during the Parnell split in the 1880s. He died in 1900, and his memory still lives on,
history,
lives on even at 125 years ago. And but talking about the unsung heroes, a lot of them have been mentioned. I'd also people that should have won an Ireland, I think, especially of Dermot Everly and Nicky Cairns. And I'd also think of, you know, Declan Brown. He was an absolutely outstanding Tipperary footballer. And the Clare fellas that Ryan mentioned. But I think that the great Clare of the Waterfields, the great Clare team of the 70s, they won two leagues. I was very fond of Sean Stack and Seamus Durek. I just thought they were good enough. They had a great team, but they made a very strong Cock team at the time, and they were just outstanding
And John, Paddy Joe Bourke told me earlier on, Roscommon, Rossi, he said he wears his GAA jersey to Sunday Mass.
That's true.
Do you, John? You don't, do you? Not that does
no,
anything
I wouldn't. I hardly wear any clothes. I kind of wear one shirt to
mess. You're an outdoor man. You're in good health, John. I hope you're in good health.
I'm unreasonably good. I mean, Timmy, a couple of doctors. One of them removed a big swelling from my wallet last week. But other than that, I'm not doing too bad. Yeah, God bless. Okay, good luck.
Great to hear John Arnold again. Sean Latton, good afternoon. Yes. Where are we going back to? Dublin, the year is Dublin, 1963. John F. Kennedy visited in June 1963.
In June,
What happened in the All-Ireland final?
Well, in that year, an extra. I was born in the inner city in a place called the name has changed now. It used to be called Joseph's Mansions in Killarney Street, block of corporation flats. It's really gone real yuppie now, by the way. No, you couldn't afford to live there.
Lovely,
now.
It's lovely.
Anyway, look, my father used to bring me as a small kid then. In short, he'd lift me over the stairs to Croker, and a neighbour lived a couple of doors down from us, the McCains. And Des McCain played in the Dublin team that year that beat Galway. And that's actually fantastic. One of our neighbours, you know, one of our own, winning an All-Ireland medal. I mean, this was the
incredible.
You know, the honour of all honours, you know what I mean?
Sean, here's a bit of commentary from that game. And listen out for the great Des McCain.
1963 was the season of fallen champions in Gaelic football. First, Roscommon and Offaly surrendered their provincial titles. Then Kerry, the All-Ireland champions, and Down, the kingpins of Ulster, lost in the semi-finals to today's contestants, Dublin, the Leinster champions, and Galway, the champions of Cork. McCain beats John Donnellan and kicks downfield. Bosco McDermott returns the compliment. This time McCain punches back to Hickey, back to Donnellan. Across into the square, but the ball eventually comes out to McCain, who relieves the pressure. John Timmins has the last word for Dublin, with this point to leave the score. Dublin 1-9, Galway 10. Dublin are now the new All-Ireland champions and take home the Premier Trophy of Gaelic football for the 17th time.
You could hear Des McCain's name there, Sean. So, that part of the city, I'm thinking of, I'm going on down now to Sean McDermott, Dermot Street, Sheriff Street, Killarney Street, Rutland Street, all around there. Was it well known as a GAA enclave?
Well, I wouldn't think so.
Neither would I.
Even though
you're so close to Croker.
But my father loved it. Listen, I remember my father he used to say to me, Mother, I'm going up the road. That meant he was going up to Croker.
Yeah.
I didn't know Dublin was playing today. No, Dublin's not playing today. He was going up to see one of his idols, Enda Colleran, who played for Galway.
Enda Colleran, he used to say, with poetry, a
wonderful player. My father loved the game for its own sake. Do you understand?
Yeah, of course, you know? Of course.
And now,
Des McCain. Is Des McCain still with us, Sean? Do we know?
No. I was talking to my older sister today.
Yeah.
Sadly, he's passed on. You know what I mean?
Okay. Remember, Des McCain, if you were in St. Joseph's Mansions, the next person to bring back a significant medal to that part of the country, about 500 yards away, was Kelly Harrington down in Portland Place.
Portland Row, around the corner.
Oh, what a great. Then, Marty, does Des McCain, well, you heard names there you'd recognise in Dublin Galway final in 63, the Timmins, various other names. Does Des McCain ring a bell, Marty?
To be honest with you, no. But in a sense, I didn't know him. I wasn't around. But I know of him and the reputation that he had. I suppose the Dublin team that I loved and the Kerry team were the team of the 70s. You know, with Paddy Cullen and Brian Mullins and all that gang, and Mikey Sheehy and Owen Liston. And Mick O'Dwyer and Kevin Heffernan in charge. They were kind of the heroes that I had when I was a young lad. But you talk about present day heroes,
Joe. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think of this weekend when Cork hurlers play Clare in Cusick Park, the battle between the league champions and All Ireland champions. But like Patrick Horgan is just an outstanding hurler, Hoggy as he's called in Cork, a Glen Rovers man, made his debut for Glen Rovers at just 17 years of age. This is Glen Rovers that had Christy Ring and the former Taoiseach Jack Lynch. Tomás Mulcahy, Dennis Collin. So when you must be really good to make your debut for your club in a championship match at 17. But he'll be 37 on the 5th of May. And there was a huge desire. I asked him, you know, I mean, outstanding memories. And his answer was, not any game in particular, but the friends I've made. The training, going down to training in Páirc Uaibh, that's the sort of thing that resonates. But you talk about heroes. I mean, Tony Brown, I think it was Grania mentioned. Mm-hmm. Tony Brown retired at 40 years of age, hoping and dreaming for an All-Ireland medal. But it was the friends he made. What an outstanding hurler. Kieran Carey from Limerick and Gary Kirby and Stephen McDonough were all heroes of mine. But you know what? You talk about unsung heroes, Joe. Counties that never got, for instance, to an All-Ireland football final. Carlow, Fermanagh, Kilkenny. Now, I know Kilkenny are used to getting the hurling finals.
Of course,
Leitrim, Sligo, Westmeath, Wicklow, Longford. And yet every day, every hour, every year,
loads of
volunteers in their clubs are trying to produce wonderful stars, whether it be Kevin O'Brien in Wicklow or Paul Barden in Longford or Gary Brennan and Clare.
And playing for the moment, training for the moment, supporting for the moment, helping out the club for the moment.
And having the dream. Just having the dream of getting. I remember when Clare got to the All-Ireland semi-final, when the Clare footballers beat Kerry, I just have to mention that for my Kerry friends, in 1992. the crack, of course, the banter, there was always great crack between Clare and Limerick and Clare and Tipperary, but the Tipperary people were very decent. They put up signs around Nina, "This way, Clare, to Croke Park," because we'd never been there. So, you know, you have to have a bit of banter on the
come
back.
Say with us, Marty, but come in, Mary Newman in Cork. Mary, your unsung hero is Sandy Fitzgibbon.
Yeah, without doubt, she's a phenomenal sports girl, lady, I suppose. Was a great camogie player, great basketball player, and played a bit of international soccer as well. But, you know, long before the Jewel Star was invented, Sandy was a Jewel Star, juggling basketball at international level, inter-county camogie with Cork and Glen Rovers. Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, unsung hero, definitely.
And you remember the final, what, the club final in 1986, they were playing in St. Paul's, Kilkenny.
Yeah, we were playing St. Paul's, Kilkenny, in Glen Rovers. I actually think Marty could have been there the same day, because he was based in Cork at that time. Yeah. I think you might have been, Marty. And, St. Paul's were the kingpins, the queens of club camogie at that stage. And I suppose we were, you know, Glen Rovers from Cork. We would have won a lot of counties in the 60s. And we were kind of rejuvenated. And we had a fantastic run, going on to win 4 All-Ireland club finals. But, you know, we would have had a lot of Munster titles in the 60s and 70s, but the All-Ireland would have eluded the club. So this was a big day for us. And, you know, I suppose playing in our own patch as well in Glen Rovers, huge occasion. And, like, St. Paul's came as hot favourites. So I think they were going for 3 in a row, if I remember me right. But, like, Sandy and, like, the players she had around her as well. But, like, I can still see, like, the match was level, time was almost up. And Sandy just got the ball. She must have evaded half of St. Paul's, but she sidestepped and danced around them. And, you know, the ball just sailed between the posts. You know, it was actually a magic moment. And, you know, at that time it was the 12-a-side small goalpost. But, like, see, you know, but she was, like, she played senior with the club. I think it was 12 or 13. But, like, what a player. Like, what a player for Cork. And great player for our club. And, you know, I've heard Marty speak there about Patrick Horgan. And, like, we're so proud of Patrick and, indeed, the Downey brothers as well.
Right,
but,
well,
like, Sandy would be up there for me with Patrick as one of the best club greats.
That's Mary, and Newman remembering Sandy Fitzgibbon.
I should acknowledge that you got Mary Newman on the radio, and Mary Newman will take full credit for teaching me everything about camogie, by the way.
Yes, I certainly did, Marty.
Okay.
I certainly did.
Well done, Mary.
Showed him what a pitch was.
Well done, Mary Newman.
I should have said nothing, Joe.
No. Mary Newman turned Marty Morrissey into a Newman.
I did, I told him what camogie was all about. I did.
And he hasn't looked back, Mary. Thanks, Mary. Porrick Gill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Who do you want to remember?
I want to remember a father and son duo. So Marty just mentioned there about Longford being one of the few counties never to reach an All-Ireland football final. But we had a notable father and son duo, the Hanafies, Jim Senior and Jimmy Junior. And they were both undone by Kerry. So Jim Senior played from the early 30s until the early 50s. But he actually played in an All-Ireland final in 1941 with Galway. He was a postman and he joined the army during the emergency. So he joined a club there that's now defunct called the Wolf Tones Club and won a Galway Senior Championship there. Mm-hmm. And if there are actually any listeners from Galway, I know the family have been trying to find a photo of that women's team. It'd be great if they could get in touch.
The women's team is?
Name
the team again and the photograph you're looking for. We want to help.
Yeah, the Wolf Tones Club, they won the Galway Senior Championship in 1941.
1941, okay.
Yeah, but he played at wing forward in that All-Ireland final of 1941 and Kerry beat them. And it was a really unusual twist of fate. I don't think it has ever happened before, but it was his fellow parishman was the referee that day. So we're both from the parish of Drumlish here in Longford, and it was a Sergeant Patrick McKenna. He was affiliated with Brough in Limerick, and he actually refereed that match. The two men would have known each other. I can't think of any other instance where that would have happened before. And he then moved on and won. He won. He was the first Longford player to win the Railway Cup in 1945. Mm-hmm. And as you know, that was a huge deal back then. He managed to keep the boy wonder, Tommy Murphy, off the team. And I remember my grandfather telling me he was listening to it on the wireless, and the commentator referred to him as the man with the magnetic hand, because he had this style of going up and catching a ball with one hand.
Super. Then
his son Jimmy Jr. Then he'd be probably more well known to your listeners, because of the great Longford team of the 60s that came so close as well. They won the National League against that great Galway team. Enda Colleran was mentioned there. They defeated Galway in that final.
And they won a Leinster, didn't they? They won a Leinster.
They won the Leinster then in 1968, and then narrowly lost the All-Ireland semi-final to Kerry.
So
became undone.
Who dashed so many All-Ireland hopes for so many different counties. Páirc Guairmíle Mágar, and thank you. That's the Wolf Tone photograph, the Wolf Tone team from 1941. We're looking for a photograph. Okay, Tom Farrell is in Westmead. Tom, who do you want to remember?
Just a player called Sonny Farrell, and the rest of the Triple Clare team in 67. Mm-hmm. It was a famous county final in Westmead. It started in 1 year and finished the next year. There was a famous incident of getting up on the crossbar. I think the match was a draw and then a replay. And there was a free awarded in to Ballinacarriga at the very end of the match. And Sonny Farrell got up on the crossbar in Cusick Park.
Right.
And prevented the free from being taken. So between objections and counter objections,
the match. They got up on the crossbar.
On the actual crossbar, yes.
And what, he's sitting on it, swinging on it?
No, he got up in the middle of the crossbar, and then two other players got up and held his hand each side. So the match wasn't finished. And then it was the following year before the final was replayed, between objections and counter objections. And the rules of the GA had to be changed, that it was illegal to get up on a crossbar, and it still stands to this day.
Brilliant. So was it known as the scandal of the crossbar, or the crossbar
crossbar gate, call it what you like, but it hit the national headlines at the time.
Incredible.
And there was actually a DVD done of it a few years ago.
Oh,
I was PRO of Leinster Council at the time, and somebody asked me.
I can see them. I can see the three of them. We can all see them on the crossbar holding each other up, and they were. And the game was called off, was it? End of?
No, the game was, yeah. They finished it at the end of the game. Yeah. So it was amazing.
Oh, but, that was brilliant. So
it's on DVD still, actually. It was
reinvented.
So the
county final in 66 didn't finish till 67.
67, yeah.
Well done. That's Tom Farrell in County Westmead. Tom, go to Joe at rt.ie, 51551. Noel McCormick is from Louth. Noel, Larry. Larry relation, no?
Good man, Joe. No, he's not. No. Well, it could be a distant relation, but anyway, Larry was a headsman in Garmerton College.
College, of course I do.
Colleges them days, in 1912, colleges them days, farmers also, they did farm. And he was a headsman, so we went over to Garmerton Station to get, he was captain of the Lowry team in 1912.
Okay.
And he went over on his boys to get on the train, which stopped at every station them days.
To get on the train in Gormanstown, Gormanston, which we would know, Dubs would know, was the train station for Butlins, when we used to get a day up in Butlins as a holiday. So he went over to catch the train to get to play in the All-Ireland in Dublin. What happened?
Yeah. And what happened was he missed the train, so he up on his boots.
And his bike.
And headed for Jones's Road, as it was called, down Croke Park. And headed on his bush and headed and got man of the match.
No.
And Laird Boone.
So he cycled from Gormanstown, which is a fair distance.
Well, it'd be about 20 miles, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a 20 mile cycle now wouldn't be many able to do it before. And then he went and he togged out, got out onto Jones's Road, you call it Croke Park, played for Laird. Won the match, and Larry got man of the match.
That's right.
Don't tell me he cycled back home, did he? No.
No, I don't know. He could have brought it.
I hope he got free travel.
The, You can throw out the bike in the train, probably, yeah.
1912. What a brilliance. Is he any relation? Yeah. Sorry, Noel, is he any relation?
No, I'd say going back.
Yeah, I'll claim him. Noel, will you claim him? That's Noel McCormack, a very close relation to Larry McCormack. And I want people to remember that if you meet Noel downtown over the next few days. Good to meet him all. Good to know. Like Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Gráinne McElwain is still with us. Gráinne, it says a lot, and we're learning it today again about the depth and the breadth of the GAA. That, by the way, it's a brilliant idea for you to travel around the country and visit, starts tonight in TG Cahir, visits the various counties. And basically through the story of the GAA silverware, you get story after story after story.
Absolutely. And you get to see who these people were. And we cover GAA, hurling, football, handball, rounders, ladies football, camogie. Okay. And that's just, and we're really looking forward to sharing the stories. I'm not going to tell too much about the stories, yeah, Joe, because I want everyone to watch it starting this evening.
But I read about, you know, I mean, you read all the.
Yeah, well, we're starting off in Armagh, which of course is the president of Jarlath Burns County.
Charlie, yeah, but done a wonderful job.
One of the things that's standing out, though, is about that community. And what I love about the GAA is that everyone has a place in it. And they have a phrase in Irish, the Osh Dunya League, and there's a place for us all. And for a lot of people maybe that have just moved to different areas, they mightn't be really interested in the football, they mightn't be really interested in hurling, but they want to be part of a community and be part of a club.
Remember Patrick Horgan before we got up to the end, because he's still playing, isn't he, for Cork?
He's still playing for Cork, and what a servant he has been for Cork hurling. And so many people, so many neutral people would love to see him win in All-Ireland. But what's really interesting about what his comments have said, it's about the journey, it's not the destination. Yeah, if he wins one, it's not defining his career, which I think for a lot of people that maybe are on the outside, we think this is the ultimate goal for all the players. But what they've all said is that journey, is that friendship, it's being part of this group. Yeah, and when they retire, they really miss that.
Yeah, and a lot of them do meet up. As Marty and Desi and Damon, all the lads know, they and you, Gráinne, they do meet up again, which is, and it's great camaraderie. Padder Co. I was talking to John Ireland earlier on. John has been to 108 All Irelands. Can you beat that, Paddy?
Paddy, yes, I was at, I think, 124 or 125 All Irelands, Joe.
And the first one was
my first one hurling was 1959.
Brilliant.
And I've missed one hurling final in between. And that was, I had a horse running in Italy called Lady Daisy, trained by Tony Mullins. Okay. And that day, Clare beat Tipperary by a point.
You had an excuse. Were you with Lady Daisy? Were you with Lady Daisy? Lady Daisy in Italy.
She got beaten. Yeah, she got beaten out there.
Okay, so you sacrificed the one All Ireland for Lady Daisy. Fair play. Who's your unsung hero, Paddy?
My unsung hero. Well, we've plenty of them in Wexford.
Yes, yes.
I suppose Mick Jacob and Martin Quigley would be two to come to mind. Yeah. And you mentioned a friend of mine. I was actually at his wedding, and I hope he'll get his All Ireland this year. And that's Pat Horgan.
Oh, of course, just
and
mentioned.
And another one would be Ken McGrath of Waterford. There were great players, and none of them have won an All Ireland.
But am I right in thinking that Martin would have been one of the few players who won All Stars but never got to the All Ireland?
No, he played in two All Ireland, 75 and 76.
He never won an All Ireland, but he got many All Stars.
Five or six All Stars.
Brilliant! Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. Okay, Paddy, you still with the horses?
Oh, I am. I'm still with the horses,
Good lad. What's on today? Cheltenham, there's a race.
Cheltenham's on today. Yeah, no, Fairy House. Yeah. I'm actually sponsoring a race in Fairy House.
Oh, that'll be great. What's your tip for the Grand National while we have you?
Haute Couture, is it? A horse called Jimmy Who, I think. He's an English horse.
Jimmy Who, okay.
I think he's around the 10-1 shot.
Okay, don't blame us. Blame Paddy. Paddy Keogh, good morning. Steve McDonough, Steve. Steve.
How are you, Joe?
Your dad. He played.
Yeah, sure. Look, yeah, he did, Joe. He played 8 or 10 years with Limerick Seniors, and they won the Minor All Ireland in 1958. Yeah. So he had quite a long career.
John McDonagh, yeah.
That's right, Joe. Yeah, yeah.
And the love of GAA is still in your family, obviously.
Ah, sure it is, Joe. Yeah, sure. You know, where would we be without the GAA? It's a fantastic organisation. You know, and all our lads at home here that they play it and play Camogie as well.
And did your father the hurler John Mc, did he ever raise a piece of silverware?
Yeah, they won a minor. Well, he didn't, you know, as a captain, Joe, but they won a minor All Ireland, as I said, in 1958, and he played senior with Limerick for 10 or 12 years, and just missed out and being part of the 1973 panel. But you know, working on the farm, and the farm was just bought in 1968 here, so he hadn't a chance really to train to that level, which was huge.
People forget that as well. People from a farming community, they're out all day, 7 days a week. A lot of things you can't predict on a farm. You mightn't be able to go training or whatever. It's very. And is your dad John still with us, Steve?
No, Joe, unfortunately, he passed away in 2012. He got sick in 2003. He had a long, hard battle and he passed away in September 2012, unfortunately, yeah.
God rest him. Well, kind regards to you and you. I know you have children yourself and your mum is still with us, is she?
She is. Thanks to God, mum is in good health. Thanks to God.
What's her first name? Eileen. Well, hello to Eileen. The widow of the late, great John McDonough, and the mother of Stephen McDonough, and the granny. Well done,
right.
Steve. Great memories. Larry O'Hara is in Cork, another guard who had an involvement with the GAA. Larry, good afternoon. Who do you want to remember?
Well, I want to remember the great Mick Roach, Joe Carrick Davins, and his great friend as well, the great PJ Ryan. They were on the chip team in the 60s and early 70s. But Mick had the misfortune of being the captain of the chip team 2 years in a row, 67 and 68 in the final.
Right.
And was beaten the 2 years. But he still won three All-Ireland medals, Mick Roach. Probably one of the greatest centre-backs and midfielder in the history of the GAA. Your panel there will agree with that, I'd say.
Yeah. And what part of chip...
There was one or two there. When you're from like Carrick and Shore, you have Waterford on one side and you've got Tip on the other side. I was based at Ballyduff Upper in County Waterford, and there was two great men there. Well, there was a lot of great men, but there was two in particular, the great Mossy Welsh and the great Shamie Hannan. And both of them huddled for Waterford for several years and they never won an All-Ireland. But by God, there were some players, both of them.
Fantastic.
But I suppose my man would be Mick Roach. I was great friends with Mick over there. He died there about 7 years ago, I suppose.
Okay. Mick Roach, he was fabulous. Okay, Larry's a farmer guard, he's in Cork. Joe at rte.ie, 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Christy Keenan. Christy, good afternoon. Your GAA, the importance of it.
Yes, good afternoon, Joe. Yes, of course, our little club, it's a very small club, Lochne Valley. And of course, my big, I suppose our part of it will be the success of the under-21s in 99.
Okay.
We had a player on that panel, Bobby Ellis, and his mother was, what makes it really good, his mother was the secretary and his father was the chairman of the club.
Okay.
So it really went down real well with us. But you have Marty still with us. We're trying to change things a little bit in Lochne Valley. We are promoting walking football. GAA played at walking pace.
Oh, I thought you were going to bring in new rules. I think we've had enough of them for a while, Christy. Keep us going.
We didn't change the rules, no. We still play the old rules.
Okay.
Good man.
Okay. And that's Christy. Christy's is based where this local club is, Lochne Valley in County Westmeath. Niall Duffy, sorry for holding you, Niall. Your grandfather.
Yeah. My grandfather, Christopher Yarra Duffy, he was shot in the neck in Crow Park in 1920 when he was 15.
Wow.
And surviving that, he went on to captain the Dublin team and he was an All-Ireland medal winner. During the 40s.
And he survived Bloody Sunday, didn't he?
Thankfully,
which is well remembered, rightly so. And where was he from, Niall?
He's from Sheriff Street.
In Dublin, centre of Dublin. And did he work down there?
Yeah. He did. He worked on the docks. His name was Yara. I think from a kid, he used to play on a ship. I think it was dry docked. Down there, a boat, it was called the Yarrow. so you got a nickname from that.
Well, as you know, Niall.
Oh, Ballybock.
Yeah, of course. As you know, Niall, everyone down the docks had a nickname. That's Niall remembering his grandfather, Christopher Yara Duffy. Andy Donoghue, sorry, Andy's from Cavan. Who are you remembering, Andy?
Hello, Joe. I'm remembering Charlie Gallagher.
Okay.
He was a great Cavan footballer from the late 50s till the early 70s. And they were talking about Mickey Cairns being the leader scorer. Charlie was the leading scorer in the GAA for about 5 years in the 60s.
And that was Charlie Gallagher.
And he was known, there's a book, Paul Fitzsimons wrote a book about him called Charlie, but he was known at the time as the Georgie Best of Gaelic football.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, he was a great ball, he was a great player and a good looking.
Hill.
Yeah.
He was very good looking. He was a fine looking man. But he was from Cuthill, but he was a dentist in Derry.
Ah. So he was up the road. So, he had a bit of travelling to do.
The Cavan team of that era were very unlucky that they didn't win in All-Ireland because there were some great players on it.
Of course, and that's what today is all about. Andy Goodamina Mogget is Andy Donoghue remembering Charlie Gallagher. Morris O'Hearn. Morris.
That's me. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Who do you want to remember? And by the way, many All-Ireland finals. I think I'm at 125. 125.
Well, including replays, 139.
Ah, Morris. That's incredible.
There you go.
Well
done. The advantage of living in Drumcondra in May.
And Morris, what year?
Well, the first one I was at was 1944, Dublin and Cork. Now, my father was a friend of a fellow called Terry Lattie, who made his name playing for Kilkenny. But in 44, he was playing for Dublin. So I've been at Dublin's last four finals. They lost all four. 1944, 1948, 1952, 1961. Lost by a point in 1961. So I think I'm waiting. Will I ever see Dublin win in All-Ireland in hurling?
Morris, do I recognise you? I recognise your voice.
There you go.
Morris O'Hearn, former Lord Mayor of Dublin, former politician. Great sportsman, heavily involved in athletics. That's you, Morris.
That's me.
Well
yes,
done.
Joe.
Great to hear from you, Morris. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, and a brother. How's a little brother doing? Bertie, how did he get on in life at all, Morris?
He's catching up on me.
That's great to hear in such good voice, Morris. Well, I reckon 139 All-Irelands, that's going to be hard to beat. Hard to beat. But you're only around the corner, but still. So what age were you when you first went in 44?
Six. So talking about the 1961 final, by the way, reminds me of the Munster final that I went to. There were 60,500 in Limerick. Well, you know, I've never been in a crowd like it. And it's over 60 years ago, and I'll never forget it.
Okay.
At the crowd.
So, Morris, I'm doing the maths here. You're in your 80s, thank God. You sound brilliant. I know you're always very, very healthy and athletic. And I say, will you hold out for as long as you can, Morris? You will, by the sound of it, until Dublin get the Sam Maguire again.
Well, the Sam Maguire is okay, you know, but the Liam McCarthy.
Oh,
the Liam,
that's elusive. Well, hold out for that. Okay, Morris. Great to hear from you. That's Morris O'Hearn, 139 All-Ireland finals.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Just, Eamon, I'll give you 2 seconds to shout out the person you want to remember quickly. Eamon McCarthy wants to remember.
Patrick Horgan.
Hurling player.
For this year, and hopefully, to get the old pulling up road there for Patrick.
Great. Well done, Eamon. John Joseph Hassett, who do you want to remember, John?
Joe, can I start you?
Come on, go for it.
Today, Joe, I want to remember unsung hero Eddie Brandon of 6 Mile Bridge, County Clare, right down at Garnier Gundam Tor. Eddie played with the all-conquering New York Clare Senior London team in 1967.
Ah, fantastic.
and they were victorious. And that's beat, it. And they beat Galway that day.
And that's
and he was a club. And John, here of my own.
John Joseph has it. That's remembering Eddie Brandon from Six Mile Bridge, who is an unsung hero. By the way, our own Brenda Donoghue says her own father, Michael Donoghue, 86 years of age, was one of the founding members of the Alan Wood GAA Club and captained them to Leinster Intermediate. And he's still going strong and was at the GAA match last weekend. Marty, onwards, you're in Cork, Marty, but wasn't that a fantastic glimpse into the depth of the GAA?
100%. Yeah. And I suppose that the bottom, I'm just trying to remember here about, I was Crook Park the other day and the Connacht Cumann na Munster was on. And when they finished the games, the boys and girls all shook hands with each other. And I remember the 1989 All-Ireland semi-final between Antrim and Offaly. And Offaly were hot favourites, but Antrim beat them. And Ulcan McFetridge, Sambo McNaughton, Dominic McKinney, Niall Patterson. And when the game was over, Offaly spontaneously gave them a guard of honour.
Well, that magic.
And that was just
magic. That's what it's all about. And thank you, Marty.
It really is. And well done on the programme. Very enjoyable.
Thank you. That was Shannon O'Gorman put it all together. And Marty, safe travelling. Grainne, your programme's in the can.
We can continue the theme of unsung heroes this evening, yeah. Joe, because we're starting in Armagh. We're going to be in Meath, Carlow, Limerick, Mayo and Derry over the next six weeks. So I hope everyone enjoys it. TG Carr tonight at 8 o'clock.
TG Carr at 8 this evening with Grainne McIlwain, James Feeney on sound, Shannon O'Gorman produce, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.